Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Earthdawn Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters with your questers, Josh and Dan. I'm Dan.
I'm Josh.
And on today's podcast, we'll be discussing all things quizzical because we're going to do email palooza 20, 30 something or other. I've lost count and don't even
care. We're diving into the mailbag, getting caught up on that here today.
Absolutely. So if you have any questions for us, like these fine folks do, please drop us a line at edsgpodcast@gmail.com, and we will pick Josh's vast, knowledgeable brain and go from there. So,
and if not my vast knowledge, at least my ability to BS significantly.
Absolutely. So let's, I think, start with the oldest one we have. So, yeah, we have this one here way back, I believe. Question from Jonathan. Hi, guys. I have two questions, one for Josh, one for Lou. The Lou episode is coming later. You'll hear that one then. So the question for Josh. Had Mystic Paths been released before Elven Nations, would you have considered turning the Blood Warders or the Exolashers into a path? Thank you.
The Exolashers, possibly. I don't know that the Blood Warders would have needed to be. The Blood Warders are just powerful, multidiscipline magicians, usually. And there's not necessarily a lot of special secret stuff that they might need. I mean, it's possible that there could be things that were just exclusive to Blood Warders, but I think the Exolashers would be a little bit more likely. Although, honestly, the Woodsman path would probably be a really good path for Exolashers to follow, because they are largely an elven cultural thing. And a lot of the knacks and special abilities that they get would suit the Exolashers pretty well. It's an interesting idea. If it had come out before, it's certainly something that might have been considered. And my gut says the Warders probably didn't need it. The Exolashers, it might be interesting. But then you have the Woodsman Path, which fills that same kind of role in terms of what they would be looking to do.
Fair.
Interesting question, though. I appreciate it being asked.
No, a little outside the box thinking, and I appreciate that. This one comes from Alexander, but I get to do a character voice, which I'm going to enjoy. So hang on a second. Greetings, Gazatimij. My name is Iroh, Gauntlet of Cinnamon of First Circle. For the last few moon cycles, I've been wondering about the importance of one's cunning, or as you call it, social defense, in the path that I follow. Throughout my life, I've cared little about being fooled. After all, it never made any meaningful impact on my existence. But now that I travel more dangerous routes, I fear that such a weakness might show itself fatal, as I've been the most charismatic of my peers. Alex, the young one that I occasionally relay my adventures to, mentioned that you might be able to help answer some of my questions. How important is it for me, as a gauntlet, to strengthen my social defense in face of the future dangers that lie ahead? Would a lion heart and resistance to taunt suffice to drive this danger away, knowing that I do not lack willpower? What would you suggest? May the spirit that pervades all watch over you. Iroh.
Well, that depends in part on the types of dangers that you expect to be running into. If you are going to be encountering social adversaries, like troubadours especially, but swordmasters and air sailors to a lesser extent, but disciplines that are known for their savoir-faire and ability to distract, rile, and upset opponents based on their ability to fast talk or taunt or such. It's definitely something to look into. If you are the most charismatic of the group, it's probably not a bad idea to invest in that if you end up going to be acting as the spokesman or representative of the group. Otherwise, your group is going to potentially run into problems with anybody that has the capability of deceiving, fast talking, or otherwise pushing you around socially.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something to keep in mind. Resist taunt as a talent, if you can pick it up, is probably worthwhile. If you have the wherewithal, if you have a group true pattern and one of the threads available on it to weave to your social defense to boost that a little bit. That might be something to look into, especially as you get more experienced. The investment you would need, that is to say, from a game mechanic standpoint, the legend points that you need to spend in order to get those advantages becomes more attractive as it is a smaller proportion of what you would spend, say, to increase a talent rank.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind. Something actually that I wanted to check really quick before I advised it.
I'm just impressed that the Obsidian in the group has a charisma of 8 and he's got the most charisma in the group. That's fun.
That is a group that is asking for trouble. That is a group that is going to be paying extra money for stuff. That is a group that is going to
be hornswoggled, bushwhacked.
Yeah, to be hornswoggled.
Swindled. Your group's a bunch of suckers. Just going to say that.
So Lionheart might be worth looking into. Lionheart will help against some things, but again, that's kind of boosts your willpower, mm-hmm. which doesn't typically help you against being affected by such things in the first place, but does make it easier for you to shake them off when they do happen. I was just checking, like the Nethermancer's ability to frighten, that actually goes against Mystic Defense. The more common terror power from horrors also mm-hmm. targets Mystic Defense. Battle Shout targets social. Distract targets social. That could actually be very damaging. That is something that would weaken your effectiveness in combat.
Yeah.
If an enemy is actually successful in distracting you, it can open you up to being stabbed in the back, surprise strike, or some other kind of action where you're physical defense, your ability to defend yourself is reduced because you're focused on this one individual. Yeah, there are places where it might be worth investing. Resist Taunt is probably a good one. Threads to your social defense to boost it up, or even just taking some time, perhaps, to boost your charisma.
Mm-hmm.
Spend some of your raises to make your charisma a little bit better. That's going to, on average, give you an extra point or two of social defense as well. But if you're looking at a low social defense to begin with, honestly, boosting it, the ability of powerful enemies to overcome that is, you're not likely to be able to boost it high enough to make it worthwhile.
Unless you find the right magic item to help you boost your social defense, but those are few and far between.
Yeah, I mean, then you could then you can get some, you can maybe find some threat items or the like to increase your social defense as well. But then again, you're looking at, there's only so many threads that you can have. Where are you going to be putting those and what kind of advantage are you going to have? Resist Taunt, fortunately, is based off of willpower. That is probably the best investment, I would say, in your situation, because then you don't need to worry about your charisma so much, except where that will perhaps cause you problems for getting affected by things in the first place before you have a chance to shake it
off. And I always look at, any time I've finished a session or finished the adventure and I have points to spend, it's always the, well, what would have been useful had I had it? Get that talent, get that skill, raise that thing up, put my points over there where it would have been nice to have last time. Now I'm prepared for this time.
Lionheart is broadly useful because it substitutes for your willpower whenever you're trying to resist anything that allows a willpower test to shake it off. And then there's the higher tier, Lion Spirit is the name of it. That's a good investment. That actually is a talent, and it adds its rank to both mystic and social defense against fear and intimidation.
Nicely done. But yeah, look at you being the strong silent type, but not so silent because you've got the higher charisma.
I'm just taking a quick look at the gauntlet.
No, do it.
Gauntlet gets access to Lionheart and Resist Taunt as talent options in the Journeyman tier. They get access to Lion Spirit when they reach Warden. So when they reach Ninth Circle, they do get access to Lion Spirit. So those are probably the ones that would be most valuable.
Yeah.
If you have the free thread slots to get magic items that can boost your social defense, that could be useful. But if you're looking at a really low score to begin with, when you get to the point where it doesn't cost relatively much to do and you've got the slots available, it might be worth looking into. But you may just need to accept that there are certain things that are going to affect you, and until you get powerful enough to get resist taunt and or lion heart, then you're just going to be susceptible to a whole bunch of fast talking and deception and social manipulation. And it sounds like your whole group may be susceptible to that. And, you know, hopefully the GM is kind to you in that regard. Thieves and con men and troubadours and swordmasters could potentially cause quite a lot of problems.
Absolutely.
In a group like that.
But by all means, keep writing in and letting us know how it goes, because I can do a better character voice than I did, but I like that one. So on to Lehman, frequent emailer. Love you, Lehman, and love these artworks you're sending over. The Tiffany pictures, I think my favorite in this one. So that's just between you and me. Hello again, Dan and Josh. I wanted to share how my game master handles legend points for new characters. I know you've talked about this topic many times, so I'm not expecting an answer or the like, just a possibility for game masters to use. There are four divisions for legend point rewards: goals, treasure, conflict, and deeds. My game master has goals and treasure legend point rewards to go to all characters, both new and those who miss a session, as we see that legend points earned for advancing our group legend, and the conflict and deeds being what we did in a specific session. He keeps a spreadsheet that totals everything up, and I, being the type of person who loves tracking legend points, or experience points in any game, I have a backup spreadsheet which has come in handy on occasion, so at any session, we can reference what legend points was gained by those who weren't at the session and get them up to speed. With our current advanced group, we range from 57,900 legend points, so 5th Circle Troubadour, and a 65,000 legend points for 6th Circle Weaponsmith. Everyone else is 6th Circle in a single discipline. It's not a big difference at all for power. With this system, it allows those who come more often to feel like their attendance means something, but not as a big penalty for when life gets in the way of a session. I know it won't work for everyone, but it might work for some groups. Also, as I said before, our group took a year hiatus, and we played a new set of characters in the same world to get back into the system. I sent some art of characters who were made at that time. Since then, we have the full roster. We ended up with two Nethermancers, a Windling and a Tuskrang, and a clutch mate, is that the right term, of the Tuskrang, who is an elementalist. I look forward to each week's episode of the podcast. Keep up the good work, Lehman.
Yeah, that's good. I do like the idea of providing something that is a reward of sorts for people that are able to make the sessions. And like you say, it may not be something that is useful or applicable for every group, but you can prompt certain behaviors that way, rewarding certain behaviors. And it's also not something that is tied as much to the nebulous role-playing awards that sometimes get applied. The advantage of just giving everybody the same legend points is that it's really easy to say how much everybody has. Because you have one person that's keeping track, whether that's the game master or a
frequent player
like Lehman, then you can just say, oh, this is what the total is, and go from there. But there is a certain value, I think, in perhaps having certain aspects of the overall legend awards that are only given to the people that are actually at the session.
Yeah.
And once you start getting into the tens of thousands of legend points, you don't end up with necessarily as huge a difference in character power, because there isn't a huge difference in character power, relatively speaking, between, say, a fifth and a sixth circle character. The step numbers are going to be approximately the same. The sixth circle characters will have an extra talent or two, or if they're magicians, have access to some extra spells. But broadly speaking, you're not looking at as huge a difference as you would if you had, say, a second circle character and a fifth circle character. There is quite a bit of a significant jump in that regard, both because of the circle difference and the tier difference, the access that the journeyman has to a whole bunch of stuff that the novice doesn't. That's a good thought. I don't have anything to really dispute with it. Obviously, if everybody is showing up for every session, or you've got a group where, for the most part, oh, somebody can't make it, well, we're going to reschedule, that's not necessarily something that's going to be as applicable. But good idea, something to keep
like
in mind.
No, I like the ingenuity on the way you separate it out. And I'm a huge, huge fan of spreadsheets myself. I use them literally every day in my home life and my work life. So, yeah, right there with you.
Yeah. My primary character tracker for Virag in the Legends game was a spreadsheet on a Google Google Sheet. Yeah, one of the tabs in it was my legend point tracking. Two columns that were like the date of the session and how many legend we were awarded, with like that just summed up as a total up there as well. And then I had other columns which were broken up, just a list of what I spent a thing on and how many legend points it cost to do that, with those totaled up and then subtracted from the total legend points so that I could know how many legend points I had left. Really handy. There was a revision recently, I think, to the Roll 20 sheet that does a lot of really good legend point tracking. People were talking about that in the Discord, I think, and there was some thanks for that. But as a crunchier system, generally you're better off keeping track of such things than to just kind of let it.
Oh, the fans love it when you talk nerdy to them, Josh. Nobody can see the smirk on Josh's face on that one, except me, which is just fine. So, yeah, I've even recreated my own character sheet on an Excel spreadsheet, and I haven't linked any math, but I like Excel. It's my fan. It's my friend.
Gosh, I had an Excel spreadsheet. I think I probably still have it archived somewhere on my computer files. It was an Excel sheet that was built for first edition, but had a whole bunch of reference tables and dropdowns and stuff. So that on the build sheet, if you typed in Nethermancer, it would automatically list all of the Nethermancer talents. A lot easier to do that with first edition, where you didn't have the optional talents and things like that. But yeah, it pulled everything and calculated all your numbers. And it had then additional tabs that were specifically formatted to pull that information over in an actual, like, 8x11 printable character sheet, so you could track it. And it was a huge
file.
Each of those was huge, the massive file. And the original one of those didn't have like the stuff from Arcane Mysteries.
Oh yeah.
The newer spells and whatnot from that book. So I modified it to include those. And oh, I'm sure I've still got that somewhere.
Time well wasted. If I could have done the math on that one, I would have done the same darn thing, by the way, don't you know? But I don't. But I was literally flipping through the Mists of Betrayal book for some research and came across the Edge character generator. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Edge character generator, finally online. And somebody, I listened to a podcast as well, they were talking about, if you don't have an online character sheet generator to, you know, I choose this character, this, plug all my numbers in for me. As a game company, if you don't have that, you are sorely behind the ball, because a lot of people are like, I can't not go back to pencil and paper anymore. This makes it so easy to do.
We don't have an official one, but we've got a semi-official one in Second Step.
Yes.
In Lars's character tracker. That is one that is sort of free and available. And then, of course,
we endorse it.
We've also got the VT. Yeah, we've also got the VTTs both in
Foundry,
Roll20 and Foundry, which allow you to track your character and whatnot.
Totally.
Pretty easily. So, yeah, the tools are available there, and we're investigating other possibilities and such as well.
Yeah, they may not be sanctioned by Fossil, but they are sanctioned by this podcast. There you are.
Well, the Roll20 and Foundry ones are sanctioned by FASA.
There's that.
Because we have the official compendia that allow you to drag and drop and do all that cool stuff.
And they're more official than the podcast. So, because we are the unofficial podcast, and I'm going to stop talking now. So this one comes in from Brendan. Question. Hi, Dan. Hi, Josh. Are karma points and or legend points diegetic to the world of Earthdawn? I'm pretty well read, but for the layperson out there, including myself, please explain the word diegetic first before you answer that question.
Diegetic means exists within the reality of the story. It is more commonly found in like film and media criticism, where you're talking about diegetic music in a scene is music that is actually there that the characters in the scene can hear and react to.
Yeah.
Okay. The example that I provided to Dan before we started recording is if you've seen Shaun of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
there's the scene where they're at
the tavern
yeah. and they're like all holed up and waiting. They start the jukebox playing Queen's Don't Stop Me Now, and they're beaten on the zombie to the beat of that. That is diegetic music. That is music that is actually there in the scene that they can hear and whatnot.
Yeah.
As opposed to non-diegetic music, which is music that's just kind of there. A lot of times, like more traditional soundtracks that are just music
yeah.
are non-diegetic. A lot of the music in Guardians of the Galaxy movies
yes.
is diegetic.
There you go.
Because it's on the Walkman mm-hmm. that Star-Lord
is playing. Yeah. Like a Batman movie.
Yeah, like whereas the big swelling theme during the battle at the end of Avengers Endgame is not diegetic. There is not actually a symphony there that is playing this stirring emotional music.
That the heroes and villains can hear. Only the audience.
Right. So the question is, there are many things within the Earthdawn rules mm-hmm. that have a diegetic existence within the setting.
Yeah.
Discipline is something that actually exists within the setting. It means something for someone to say that I am a yeah. sword master. Mm-hmm. Circles are something that exist within the setting.
Yeah.
There are many things within the framework of the character rules and setting and such that actually exist within the setting. Threads and patterns and talents are a thing that exists
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent. Like people recognize that they have these magical abilities and even have sort of names for them.
Yeah.
But that is not the case of everything. This actually is a question that ties into one of my longstanding bugbears when it comes to that. And that is that the discrete points, karma points and legend points especially, are not diegetic. They are not something that exists within the setting. Karma as a concept sort of exists within the setting as the idea of something that adepts have as a sort of pool, a well of magical energy that they can draw from and that can be exhausted. And yeah. the more powerful and in tune they are in terms of following their discipline, the more of that they have. And their karma ritual and meditation that they do every day allows them to sort of tap into and refresh that magical connection. But there are not really discrete quanta, that is to say, individual points in that pool that an adept could actually break down.
Yeah.
There is some, I think it's probably in Prophecy. I feel like that novel, there is some, or it might be in Prophecy, but also almost certainly in The Longing Ring.
Hmm.
There is quite a bit of sort of description of drawing on the magic and yeah. the magic sort of running out at certain points.
Yeah.
Whether that is as a result of sort of a talent crisis, which is something that Jerol struggles with quite a bit.
Yes.
Because of the philosophy that he is inducted with, he has to behave a certain way in order for the magic to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he is just an apprentice and young and inexperienced, it is difficult for him to keep that mindset in place. But that well of magical energy that adepts draw from and that appears as a narrative feature in some of the novels and stories.
Yeah.
Does not necessarily have discrete quanta that they could do experiments and find out.
How much do I have?
How much do I have? I don't think that the actual points themselves exist. The concept exists because yeah. the karma ritual is actually a thing that adepts perform.
It's a centering.
For the purposes of a game, you need to have points. You need to have numbers. You need to have some kind of thing yeah. that you're wrestling with.
Yeah.
Figuratively speaking. But I don't think karma points are a thing, just karma as a sort of concept of the magic that an adept draws from.
Fair.
Legend points are not a thing. Even conceptually no. within the setting.
No.
Legend points are not a thing. I used to have this bit practically with my late wife because I have complained about this issue quite a bit.
He's got this prepared, folks.
Oh, yeah. We started referring to the whole concept as the Legend Point Bank. Okay, it's time for me to raise things up. I'm going to go down to the Legend Point Bank and make a withdrawal so that I can buy this next rank of a talent.
Yeah.
I don't think that the ranks of a talent as quanta as they exist within the rules is actually something that necessarily exists as something within the setting.
Yeah.
There has to be a certain point at which you're just saying, we're kind of roughly simulating the reality of this place. The idea of legend being something that makes you more powerful, I think that's a little bit of a problem, honestly.
Fair.
Because you start getting into weird things of like, if I go on an adventure and nobody knows about it, you still learn things. You still gain experience. Legend points are just basically the fancy name for experience.
Yeah. How much you've done, how many things you've seen, accomplished.
What you have done, what you have seen, what you have learned, what you have experienced. And those are just kind of accumulated and then allow you to invest in increases in your character's abilities as a result of what they have learned and practiced and trained and done.
Yeah. Slight measure of your fame as well.
Legend points, as far as I'm concerned, are not a thing, not even conceptually within the setting. They're just not a thing.
Fair.
There's more to his question, but yeah.
Oh, he's got like three or four follow-up questions. I think you've already answered number three. Are the ranks and talents diegetic as well? You already said no. Or do adepts have an innate feel for when they are ready to circle up?
Yes and no. I don't know necessarily that it's an innate feel so much as after having some adventures and experiences and meditating, because that is something that happens in the setting, the idea of training or the meditation to increase your ability.
Current talents,
what that is in reality is the adept reflecting on what they have done and learned in the course of using that talent, that magical ability, reinforcing its magical presence within their pattern. And so when they have done a certain amount of that, it's not something probably that gets dealt with in the game a lot because it's probably kind of boring. But there are probably times when an adept would go to a trainer to potentially advance in circle, and the trainer would presumably be testing them in some capacity to determine that they are actually able to do what they need to be able to do in order to be granted access to the next levels of mastery in their discipline. Anybody who has taken martial arts kind of understands this whole process. When you start out and you're a white belt, that is, you're a brand new rookie, they teach you very basic things.
Yes.
They teach you your
how to
front stance and your horse stance and your basic punch and your basic kick.
And how to fall.
And how to fall. And you have like a form that you go through. I remember when I took Taekwondo when I was in grade school.
Yeah.
You know, a series of moves where you demonstrate that you can do like the blocks and the punches and, you know, it's like a kata of sorts. That's not the term that we used for it, but that's basically what it is.
It's a muscle memory routine.
Yeah. And in order to advance to white belt with
a red
gold stripe, if I am wrong, don't at me. it was like 40 years ago. And I don't remember the exact progression, and I can't be bothered to look it up right now.
Who cares?
White belt, white with gold, gold belt, gold with green. Like, I don't remember the progression, but that sort of thing. Like, the colors are different, and the progression is different in karate or capoeira or any of these kind of things.
Kung fu. Knock yourself out.
So you perform the white belt thing to demonstrate that you have learned the skills and are capable of displaying them and performing them correctly. And then they go, okay, we're going to grant you this advancement. Now you are the next step up in the progression. And now we're going to teach you some more advanced.
Yeah.
Slightly more advanced moves. That's the basis to a certain extent that disciplines and the circle advancement is founded on. You need to demonstrate. And the, I don't know whether it's in the fourth edition books so much. I know it was in earlier editions. The original companion, I think, talked about the rituals of advancement.
Yes.
That were often done. A lot of those are, you need to demonstrate mastery of a certain thing before they will allow you to advance.
Yeah.
You need to like solve a problem using the abilities that you know thus far. Assuming that you succeed, that is sort of demonstrating your ability to do this.
Yeah.
And therefore they say, okay, you are now sixth circle, and I am going to teach you the basics of a couple more things that you are able to do, and then you go out and practice them and learn them and improve them, and when you think you have mastered them, you can come back and demonstrate, and then we can, like, go from there. But I don't think that there are discrete ranks as a thing is not quite, for the purpose of rules, you have to break things down in some capacity.
Fair.
Right? You have to divide things up to have some kind of progression, to have some kind of advancement, but...
And to know which dice to use.
If we're looking at the real world, what is my skill rank in layout?
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's
my 12th book. I'm rank 12. No.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing. Like, for the purposes of a game, you need to simulate things and have to assign numbers to things to a certain point. But that doesn't automatically mean that everything that has a number or assignment in Earthdawn exists within the setting, even though there are things that do.
Well, and I like the idea for the instructor, the higher circle, you know, teacher, to say, okay, now that you've reached fourth circle, you've learned these new talents, when you are ready, come back and I will teach you whatever the fifth circle talents are for that discipline. And not necessarily by name, but by function. Like if you're playing a scout and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to come back to me when you're seventh circle and I'll teach you, you know, how to find a safe path. Because that's a seventh circle safe path talent. So I like that idea. In-game.
Yeah, there are, I don't know if Lou actually has talked about this in the past. There is in-setting material in first edition that actually does address specific talents by name. And has the characters talking about, you know, when I do my, I think it's the archer, I think, that like has that phrasing where he's like, you know, when I use my direction arrow talent.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the archer. But things like that. And yeah, there are probably, in the same way that you have your roundhouse kick or your front snap kick or your
block,
the various moves in martial arts have names that are associated with them. The techniques and the stuff that you have as an adept would also presumably have names to sort of identify what these various mystical abilities are.
Yes.
I think that's fine.
There's a bunch of them literally in Muay Thai.
Yeah.
If you watch any of the Tony Jaa films, one of the fairly early first one or two films, he actually goes through the forms and puts a name to all of them. And they're fantastic. They're awesome. But it's all, you know, Muay Thai has that a lot.
Think of fencing. You've got, you know, parry, thrust, riposte.
Oh, totally.
There's a whole bunch of specialized terminology to describe what it is that you're doing. And so adepts and disciplines have similar things. They're just magical abilities that they call talents.
Fair. So Brendan's last point, so far I've assumed these values aren't exactly known to the adepts of the world and that they just have an innate sense that doesn't translate 100% between character sheet and character. But I was also very curious to hear your answers because, yeah, Josh, you jumped right into his second question, which is, you know, legend points on a larger scale. Do adepts know before meditating for 8 hours that the rank will increase, or would it be fitting to assume adepts occasionally meditate with the intent to become stronger, but their lack of sufficient legend means the meditation has no effect mechanically? So, I mean, you already went through all of this.
I wouldn't even go that far. The aspects of things that need to be mechanized for the purpose of a game.
Yeah.
And the things that are sort of elided and ignored and gone over when it comes to playing the game and the lives of the characters. You know, same thing as like when you're watching a movie. You see the guy leave his apartment and then they cut to him walking into the office. You don't need to show that whole middle bit where they walk down the street.
Street out of the subway, waited for the line.
Go into the subway. Go through the turnstile.
That ain't part of the story, man.
Yeah, that ain't part of the story. And so, like I said earlier, with regards to the training, you may have moments where an adept goes to a potential trainer to try and advance in circle and actually does not demonstrate the mastery that is required for them to advance.
Yeah.
That is almost certainly something that happens, but from a game system and gameplay standpoint, unless it's something that is being focused on as an aspect of the role play and story that the group is choosing to focus on, you can ignore it. Just as you can also, you know, ignore 95% of the time or more that, like, they need to go to the bathroom.
Yes, absolutely.
Or, like, every meal that they eat.
Yeah. All the shopping expenses. Come on.
Yes, we may be having this conversation over breakfast, but we're not going to role play through every breakfast that we have every day.
No.
We're going to time skip over the stuff that isn't important or that we don't want to focus on.
And to your point, 90% of the times that my characters have to go shopping, They just, I'm going to go buy this. I'm going to go buy that. I'm going to go buy that. I'm going to go buy that. Done. See ya. Okay, we're ready to go. And that's, you know, takes 5 minutes. The other 10% of the time, yes, we will role play and haggle and go the money and, you know, do all this stuff, whatever. But that's only because somebody really wants to go shopping and really wants to role play that. But 9 times out of 10, we just hand wave it, mark it off, write it down, spend your money, mark that off. Let's go.
I really do like how strongly aspects of the mechanics are tied into the setting.
Yeah.
Because part of that is the idea that the game setting was sort of created to explain why things were the way they were, and the mechanics reflect that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that every mechanic is something that has a one-to-one direct correlation with what the quote-unquote reality of the setting would be if you were actually living as a person within it.
Yes. So that ends our questions for the day. That's all we got for this last little mailbag here. Any further thoughts on anything we talked about?
No, nothing else on that. We've got a big old conversation. We have already recorded the episode with Lou. Did that a couple of weeks ago.
Last week.
It was last week, yeah.
It was last week. They've all blended together.
Time has been weird. We've been doing a lot of recording the last few weeks.
Yes.
We ended up with about 2.5 hours of recorded time with him.
Yeah. But thank you all for your questions. We had a plethora of questions.
We had a lot of questions. We had a lot of good discussion that kind of came out of them. Mm-hmm. We're actually probably going to end up breaking that episode into three that parts. Recording into two or three, probably three parts. Roughly 45 minutes to an hour each, depending on
how
where
goes.
The good break points are.
Yeah.
I also, with Lou's generous permission, recorded the video of the three of us chatting.
Yeah.
So that when I put together the YouTube version of it, that video will actually be available to be watched in much the same way that the couple of live shows that we did
at Freedonia
also Con. Actually have, you know, for FreedoniaCon actually have us on screen. Mm-hmm. So that will be available as well. So this is 198, 2 weeks from when this episode drops, December
6th.
6th, December 20th, we're expecting the first part of those Lou interviews of the Lou episodes to drop. And again, we're looking at probably three episodes, which means actually that we're going to have some weeks off where we don't have to record.
Yes.
We will be releasing content, but we won't have to meet every other week. We'll have some other time to like relax through the holidays.
Love you, Josh. We're going to be on a break.
Yeah. So yeah, that's all. So stay tuned for that. Just one more episode before we get into our,
Lou
Palooza.
It's absolutely Lou Palooza. I also figure for episode 200, we need to go over our stats again. Tell everybody how the podcast is doing with our numbers and reach.
Yeah,
and
well, maybe we can talk about that in 199.
I think you're right.
Because we already have the 200 recorded with Lou.
Yeah.
There's plenty of stuff there. We can do that.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think you're right. 199 just to set up Lou Palooza. Go from there. Absolutely. Folks, until next time, yeah, don't worry about your legend points being in-game for your legend.
Worry about your legend, but don't worry about the points. The points aren't real. The points don't matter.
Good night, everybody.